I don't think a lot of people realize how much goes into the planning and development of a vineyard.
And I look at Sauvignon Blanc too, as it can be very transparent of the farming style.
A lot of people don't realize Sonoma County is 1 million acres. Makes us about the size of Rhode Island as a state.
For most people who are really into wine, being a wine dude, a wine nut, or whatever you want to call it, I think they all have a wet dream to make their own wine eventually.
I really have fun with doing my job, with doing wine, with being viticulturist.
You know, to stay out of the vineyard, I only have the shotgun for the boar, and I'm thinking, great.
As much as I love Chardonnay, I didn't want to spend my nights worrying about it and my days talking about it.
I worked 14 hours the day before I went into labor. I was determined to get most of that Chardonnay in.
In another beautiful, sunny day in Napa Valley, in a room full of half crazy, half passionate people. I mean, how bad could it be?
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 190. And this week we feature Linda Neal of Tierra Roja Vineyard and Winery in Napa Valley. In Napa Valley, Oakville is a very special place for Cabernet Sauvignon. Linda Neal farms just over 4 acres along Silverado Trail and makes a very special Cabernet called Tierra Roja. Linda's wine industry experience is varied, and among other things includes wine retail, to vineyard manager, to owner. And best of all, she farms the land as well. About 3 hours away, she owns yet another winery named Mellowwood. This is our second interview with Linda. Her first was back in 2010, podcast number 16. So it appears we were long overdue. We spoke with Linda during Auction Napa Valley Week, catching up like old friends. We're here with one of my absolute favorite people in Napa Valley. I have to start with that. We're here with Linda Neal of Tierra Roja and of Mellowwood, if I could say that, winery, correct?
Yes, very nice to see you, Ray. Thanks for coming back.
Always like to come back. Always like to see you. It's good to be back in Napa Valley.
Well, we've got an exciting week with the wine auction. And most importantly, people having a good time.
That's right. And in the end, people benefiting who need to benefit from this.
Yes, we're very blessed here in the Napa Valley, and especially wonderful that everybody shares.
It's a very cool thing. So it's been a few years since we've actually sat down and talked. We've caught you at Premier a few times and at barrel auctions in the past, but to really sit down and chat, it's been a while. So it's good to be able to be back at your home and talk about your wine. Anything new going on right now in terms of what you're doing?
Well, every day is new. You know, it's just so exciting. Life in the vineyard, every year is so different. You walk out from one day to the next and the vines have grown and you don't even recognize them. It's like having children. And so it's constantly changing. I'd say that we're experiencing a beautiful year here in 2016 with just enough rain, you know, not facing a serious drought, not inundated. Just looks like a perfect year. For me, I'm just steady at my little 250 cases a year, and so nothing's really changing there. It's all good.
One thing I wanted to bring up was Tor Kenward's Tierra Roja, as you just mentioned, vineyard designate wine. I have this little ego thing of mine where I got to pass on the information. Do you remember that at all, years ago? I was interviewing you, and I told you my next interview that day was Tor.
Oh, were you the first to break the news?
Well, you told me that you had a message for Tor and it asked me if I would tell him. And I said, sure, what is it? And you said, tell him I said, yes.
Ah.
And I'm very proud that I got to do that.
Well, and he's doing a beautiful job with the fruit. I'm very proud of that association. And Jeff Ames, his winemaker, you know, I think they're doing a great job.
And he's a great guy, too.
Yeah, he is. And I'm just, as you know, I'm a farmer that makes a little bit of wine, and, you know, I'm happy to be selling the majority of the fruit. But I want it to go to someone who loves it and makes something special out of it, so.
Well, I think you make something special out of it, too, from my point of view. So I've tasted it many, many times, and I have to say, you know, this idea of making one particular wine, I've always seen that as being very brave because
You have to make it great, and you do a fine job. When I first met you, you had just been getting the Mellowood project going, and I don't even remember how many years ago that was off the top of my head.
Well, open to the public since 2010. So the first vintage was 2008, but I actually bought the property in 2000. So it took a while to clear the land, plant the vines, get them up to where you have some crop, sold crop for a few years, and then finally making some wine. And there's a darling little tasting room up there. And so that's one of the things I'm not able to do in the Napa Valley is have a tasting room. This property is too small to qualify. But up there, I can actually have a bonded winery and a tasting room. So that's a lot of fun.
How often do you get up there?
Well, I'm there a minimum of every weekend. I go up there Friday night. I'm open to the public Saturday and Sunday. Yes, indeed. It's me pouring for you folks. And then I come back here Sunday night. But like last week, for example, there was vineyard work to do. So I was there all week. So just this time of year, it's pretty much a week in Oakville and a week in the foothills. Back and forth.
No, you're the exact definition of owner-operator because you are the person behind it in terms of the finance, and you are the person that is out there doing the work and in there doing the work, especially at the tasting room.
Well, you know, if you're not going to be a participant, you know, it's, I do it for love. You know, if you just want to make money, there's a lot easier ways to make money than the wine business. It has to be a calling of passion.
Obviously, what you have here, what you're making here is Cabernet Sauvignon, and up there you're doing Syrah
and Zinfandel.
And Zinfandel. And who's making your wine for you up
well,
there?
Well, that's been made by David DeSanti also.
Okay, that I didn't know, oddly enough. Is it kind of weird, you know, making such extremes in your wines? It's just not just one area, it's two completely different areas in terms of where you're getting the fruit from.
No, you know, it's fun to have that diversity. It really is two completely different projects. A lot of people ask me, well, why didn't you just use the Tierra Roja name there? But it's two different. You know, you've got $150 Cabernet Sauvignon from Oakville, you know, one of the most highly sought after areas in the world, versus $26 and $28 Zinfandel and Syrah from a relatively new area in terms of consumer awareness, fair play. It actually has a lot of history going back to the gold rush days, but it's just never been, you know, as forefront in the public mind as Napa.
When you talk about that history, I mean, was this a settlement of some sort where gold miners were living?
Along Highway 49. So you may not be familiar because, you know, you're from out of state, but here in California, you know, primarily things got rolling with first the Spanish missionaries, and they brought grapevines, and we had vineyards going back to those days. But then we got this next wave of rolling with gold being discovered in 1849 here in California at Sutter's Mill, which is very close to this area where Fairplay is. So there's a highway, Highway 49, that pretty much goes across the same elevation throughout the Sierra foothills from Quincy down to Oakhurst, and gold was discovered all along this 1,500, 2,300 elevation, and all these little towns are still in existence that date back to the Gold Rush days. And right down the street from me is the D'Agostini Winery, which was one of the oldest wineries in the state.
Are there any ghost towns around that way at all?
You know, I'm sure there are, except that, you know, there's always somebody living there. California, it's hard to find a spot that's completely ghosted out, yeah.
No, that's kind of cool, though. I mean, to have that history of that area, it's such a really big, important part of America's history, yet in an area that maybe a lot of people aren't aware of.
Well, and that's just it. They think of the gold miners, but they don't think of the fact that all those gold miners needed support in terms of everything from their famous Levi jeans to the wine and vegetables and everything else that they needed. So as soon as possible, people started setting up little wineries to meet those needs.
This traveling back and forth, I mean, I know you well enough to say I see your love quite clearly of the wine, but does that really present a challenge to you, especially when you're into harvest? You know, that's got to have you running around like crazy.
Well, it's actually, I love the drive. I love driving. I love being in my truck. It's actually the most relaxing part of my week is to get in that truck and make that three-hour drive and books on tape. But you're right, logistically, sometimes the effect with harvest, and that can be difficult sometimes because it just seems like it all comes at once. The Cabernet down here is about a month ahead of up there, but it's not a month ahead of Zin and Syrah. So they all tend to come within a few days of each other. So that time is a bit harried. But fortunately, the rest of the year, I'm able, because this area is about a month ahead, I'm able to finish the first suckering pass here and then go make the first suckering pass up there and then bounce back and forth for the half a dozen operations that happen throughout the spring and early summer, and it works out fine.
What's the altitude?
It's about 2,300.
So it's up there a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's pretty cool.
It's right at the transition line where the oaks start transitioning into pines. It's beautiful.
I would love to get up there someday. I've never seen it. So you're going to be having your release party in Las Vegas this year, and that's going to be for your 2013, okay. And when you're introducing a wine like this, I mean, this is your baby, really. You know, that's got to be a really proud moment for you to stand there and amongst your friends and introduce them to this new wine. And you do pour, from what I remember, you pour some older vintages as well at that event, correct?
What we always do is the tasting. It's one time all year that you can taste the wine for free at the tasting prior to the dinner. And then you might get a chance to taste it other times throughout the years at charity events, but usually you're paying admission to the charity events. And so people can come in and do that. And that part is just the new release. But then a lot of times people want to choose to come to the dinner. And so there's a small charge for the dinner, but I'll bring out older vintages, sometimes even the Mellowwood wines. And so you'll get one of my wines paired with all five courses. So it's fun. But mostly it's just kind of become a little old home week where people start coming into town Friday night, enjoying each other's company, even if that's the only time they see each other all year. And with any luck, the Giants will be in the World Series again. And we'll incorporate that into our weekend.
Some people who've tried your wine and really enjoy it, we're interested in going to this kind of an event. How would they do that? I mean, do they have to be on your mailing list, or what do they have to do?
Everyone on my mailing list will get an invitation to the event. And so they can go to the website, tierraroja.com, and they'll see a place to sign up for the mailing list. And it's easy, as long as they do it far enough in advance. Those invitations go out by snail mail, maybe a month ahead of time. But there's plenty of time right now.
Wanted to talk about, you know, you've been a vineyard manager, you've been an owner, you've been in this business for an awfully long time. I'm sure you've been through all kinds of crazy experiences. I can't even imagine how long that list is. But can you think of any, you know, one or two crazy stories that you, something you've experienced unique to this business that, you know, some of our listeners might like to hear?
You know, I'm hard-pressed for a crazy experience, but what comes to mind is knowing all the old-timers. When I first started in the vineyard management business, you know, I was one of the youngsters, which, of course, no longer am I in that category. And just hearing all the stories of the way the Napa Valley used to be. And now I find myself in that same position talking to young people that are here today, that things have changed so much, even in the short 25 years that I've been here. And thinking of it, you know, well, let's put it this way. None of the crazy stories are fit for publication, put it that way. Except that the title of my my book that will be, if you are reading this, then Angelo Ragusa and I must both be dead. So we'll revisit that another time. But a lot of the people that really founded this industry, it was just a different wild time, and they actually worked, you know, the owners worked the land. And you don't see that as often anymore. Usually the owners don't work the land, so.
I mean, I feel you obviously have a sense that you miss seeing that kind of thing, being an owner and being that you are the person out there working the land. I'm assuming you miss that.
Well, I miss that. It was a different kind of camaraderie. But, you know, what we have today is special, too, because this search for excellence, this pushing for excellence, brings upon a different kind of camaraderie than the old-timers' camaraderie. So it's still good, just in a different way.
There's been a lot of new wineries popping up in the valley. I in the short 15 years or so I've been coming out here, lots of new wineries, lots of changes in that regard. Does that worry you at all for the future of the valley?
No, I don't think so. I think that the more the merrier. The more the merrier. As long as everybody's doing good quality. As long as they're doing good quality and hold the standards that Napa Valley promotes, then it's good.
Is it fair to say that that standard is so high that you wouldn't have much of a choice? I mean, I would almost think naturally a winery not working as hard or not putting the quality into it is going to get weeded out just because of what's been established by the valley. Is that fair?
I would like to think so. I would like to think so. That everybody's raising the bar. But I'd like to think it's because of the encouragement and the pull more so than the pushing out. That people who don't want to do that level of quality just, you know, they can go somewhere else. And there's plenty of places for them to go.
Sure.
Now, mind you, there's beautiful quality wines made all over the world. You know, not just in Napa Valley, but we're very proud of what we have here.
No, no doubt. And the reputation of the valley is well earned. I find the argument, the discussion, the thought of the word quality sometimes brings up debate with people. But do you ever run into that? Because to me, quality is paramount.
Well, and quality is certainly in the eye of the beholder or the drinker. So, for example, the word quality in France is directly equivalent to sugar. It's directly equivalent to how high we could get the sugar this year because their growing conditions are so challenging. You know, basically it rains all the time and a lot of it is swampland, and how they make the beautiful wines they make, it just blows my mind. But to get natural sugar, that is their definition of quality. And so we have the luxury here, we have natural sugar every year. In fact, in the United States, it's illegal to add sugar. So we don't have that. So quality then becomes, in my definition of quality, is clean. That you don't have bacterial growth and other contaminations. It's not necessarily a definition of style. That's altogether different. You can have, you know, hundreds of thousands of different styles of wine, but as long as you've kept them clean, bacteria free, that's my definition of a quality wine.
I think the other thing I want to just touch on a little bit is the idea of price. I think we all know price does not always equate to quality. But when it comes to fine wine, especially Napa Valley fine wine, when you look at pricing, there's a very clear effort behind that price most of the time when you say because of the work that goes into making that wine.
And I don't think it's possible for the average consumer to appreciate what goes into an expensive bottle of wine unless they visit us. Unless you are out, that's why I always try to take visitors out into the vineyard. I remember we did a clinic one time. And when someone goes out into the vineyard and they actually see what the hand labor is like, how many hours of precious tending it takes for each individual vine, they start to get a sense of appreciation. Then if they go into the winery and they actually see how many times human hands have to handle that, then they start to say, how can they possibly do it for this? How can they possibly do it for the prices that they're doing it for? Whereas if everything is machine done, and there are some wonderful drinkable wines that never touch human hands, right? But then you drink those and you want to step just to the next level. And eventually you find yourself knocking on the door of the really fine wines, and those take a lot of hand tending. And somebody has to pay for that.
Sure. And that's not even including the marketing, the labeling, the bottling, the paperwork, the compliance.
Oh, yes, there's all of that. Well, you know, when I first started in agriculture was as a student, and then I worked at a retail shop. And then I worked for another retail store just selling ag chemicals. And I thought, boy, we have it tough. You know, we have to go out there and represent these products to the end users. And man, it's very competitive. Then I worked for a manufacturer. And wow, you know, the manufacturer really has it tough. The PCAs, the consultants, you know, the ag chemical industry has it. We are bearing all the burdens of this industry. Then I was a grower, same story. Then I was a licensed farm labor contractor, same story. Then I was a vineyard manager, same story. Then I was, you know, a winery, same story. And everybody tells you, oh, whatever you do, don't get a distributor. You know, they take half the money and they don't do anything for it and this and that. Like, well, what do I know? And whatever you do, don't submit your wine to the press because, you know, you're just at their mercy and all bad advice. Everybody earns their dollar. Everybody along the spectrum earns their dollar. The distributor, yeah, he takes a big chunk, but he has to give a chunk to the retailer and he has to transport it and he has to go out there and market it. So everybody along the line is working really, really hard for their little slice of the pie.
The idea is to get people to understand the value, whether it be an expensive bottle of wine has value in it because of the quality of the wine. That's what's important to understand.
Well, and it's fair to say that for many, many people in this world, a $10 bottle is a luxury, and we have to respect that. And how wonderful that there are some nice, clean, beautiful wines available at that price. But if it becomes your hobby, if it becomes your passion, you just naturally edge to wanting to try something even a little bit better, even a little bit better. And I certainly hope that we're delivering that consistently for people. I think we are.
I think you're doing a great job of it myself, but I'm a little biased.
Thanks. Keep that bias.
Linda, for our listeners who'd like to learn a little bit more about you online, both for Tierra Roja as well as Mellowood, how would they do that?
Well, both wineries have a website, tierraroja.com, mellowoodvineyard.com.
Well, it's always great to see you. We're lucky enough to be able to see you just about every year, if not more than that. And hopefully we'll be able to get to see you in Las Vegas. So thanks for taking the time on this stunning, stunning, beautiful afternoon.
Well, enjoy the auction week, and I will look forward to seeing you at the barrel auction on Friday.
We'll see you there.
Okay.
Cheers.
Thanks, Ray.
Learn more by visiting tierraroja.com or mellowoodvineyard.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2016.